Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this. Talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hi, I'm Chanti.
And I'm Lynx, and you're listening to Muses.
Enjoy the show. Welcome to Muses, the podcast all about the inspiring women in rock and roll, including wives, girlfriends, groupies, lovers, and mothers.
Yes, this is kind of a different episode for us, and I'm excited to hear all about this. I'm glad you thought of this because I know that girl and his mama are going to have a TV show coming out soon. So,
well, apparently the first episode was released May 6th.
Oh,
ooh, yes.
Okay. We're a little behind then.
So if anybody is wondering what we're talking about, today I'm going to be covering Muses Mothers, inspiring mothers, really influential in getting and supporting the career of their son,
talented
daughter, yeah, child.
And for those who don't know, we actually interviewed a mama once.
Yeah, that was so much fun.
Yeah, so you can check back in old episodes for an interview with Agnes DeMarco, Mac DeMarco's mom, and she's amazing and a lot of fun. So please check that out.
Yes.
If you haven't.
So for this episode, I went back and looked at the book From Cradle to Stage, Stories from the Mothers Who Rocked and Raised Rock Stars by Virginia Hanlon Grohl. So it's this book that this unscripted series directed by Dave Grohl is streaming now. It's on Paramount Plus. So it's not a streaming service that I have, so I haven't been able to watch it. I saw the trailer. It looks lovely. And it really just looks like a video version of this awesome book that she released in 2017.
Cool.
Yeah, so they released it on Mother's Day in the US.
Yeah, nice.
Yep. I was lucky enough to meet Virginia Grohl. She signed my copy. We were at Canadian Music Week a couple of years ago, and I scored a ticket, and I waited, and I was front row center, and I was sitting a foot from Dave Grohl and his mom, Virginia. And then afterwards, I met her, and she signed my book, and I gave her a little card, and
so cute.
Yeah, I
love that he involves her in this, and you know, did a special project with her, and continues to. It's just so cool. I love it.
Yeah, so in the unscripted series From Cradle to Stage, they go through six musicians and their respective mothers, interviewing them and chatting with them and going on a little road trip. And as we'll see through this, Virginia has been on the road with Dave, not so much in his early years, but a little bit, but definitely lately with, you know, Foo Fighters and their band and their families. It's a real family experience these days.
That's so cool. I love it.
So shall we begin by learning a little bit about Virginia Hanlon?
I would love to, yeah.
Okay. She was raised in an old farmhouse on 6 acres of land in Youngstown, Ohio.
Cool.
Her father purchased it when he finished his service in Iwo Jima and Japan after the Second World War. They didn't have a television, and Virginia's memories center around playing on the property, their porch, and family gatherings inside the kitchen. She describes her upbringing as wholesome. Now, COVID-19 wasn't the first time Virginia and her family have had to quarantine, because they had their first experience with doing so when her mother became a victim of the polio epidemic in 1949, before making a full recovery.
Wow. Yeah. It wasn't that long ago that polio was an issue, like a big issue.
Yeah, apparently they had to have a sign on their door saying in quarantine.
Wow.
Virginia always loved to sing. She had a clear, perfectly pitched mezzo-soprano voice and started her own girl group with two of her high school friends, Sherry and Geraldine.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
They named themselves the Three Bells.
Aww.
They built a repertoire of pop music standards. They played the Women's Club, the Lions Club, the Kiwanis Club, all the clubs, and of course, local events. Virginia arranged the music for the trio, figuring out the harmonies and solo parts for all of the girls. Once she went to university, she attended Ohio Wesleyan University and sang in the women's chorus. She says that when she was blessed with her two children, she had a new trio.
Aww.
And so that's how Dave Grohl came to discover a harmony. Dave recalls a hot summer day driving through Springfield, Virginia in their Ford Maverick. The year was 1975. Dave was 6 years old, and of course they were listening to music in their car when Carly Simon's You're So Vain came on the radio. Virginia and Dave were both singing, and then their voices split into harmony. Virginia took Mick Jagger's lower line while Dave took Carly's high lead vocal. This was a life-changing and affirming moment for Dave. He says, "This moment is burned in my heart and mind as my first love, my musical big bang, if you will. Hell, this was the chicken and the egg. From that moment on, I heard life with an entirely new set of ears. I scoured the radio for harmony. Songs became more than songs. They became my toys. They became my puzzles. Some became my best friends. Some became my worst enemies. I was fascinated, enraptured, obsessed. I was hooked."
Ah, I love it. It's so cool that he can specifically remember like the life-changing moment, you know? Not a lot of people remember that. They're like, they usually don't stand out. You realize after, like, oh yeah, but that's so cool.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Dave coming into this world. On January 14th, 1969, David Eric Grohl was born in Warren, Ohio. There was a group of resident physicians present, and this was going to be their first birth that these new doctors would experience. So when Dave came into the world, he was greeted by applause. Virginia says, "The first sound David Grohl heard."
Makes sense.
As a child, he was, as you'd expect, happy, goofy, funny. There was always music in their house. Virginia loved Motown and Mozart. Her daughter Lisa brought home David Bowie and Husker Du. And to that, Dave added Metallica and Black Flag. The three of them sang together, made up songs together. There was always music.
Cool.
Yep. So nice that, you know, Dave's mom, Virginia, who wrote this book, you know, she was a teacher for many years and she got to experience like traveling with him. And now she got to write this book and do these interviews. It just seems so nice and rounded for her and great to put her life into this kind of perspective.
Yes, exactly. And highlight how important these relationships are, you know,
yes.
Cultivating talent, you know.
Mm-hmm. So we'll talk a little bit more about Virginia's impact on Dave, and then we're going to get into three rock moms who I chose out of the book. Now, there are many, and I'll tell you who they are when we get to them. I'm not going to spoil the surprise.
Okay.
I think you'll like who I chose. And then towards the end of the episode, I'll tell you all of the other kind of people that you could, if you were to read this book or, I guess, watch the series now, you can see many other mothers and their rock kids.
Oh, I'm excited.
So Virginia bought Dave an inexpensive acoustic guitar at a very young age. And while she might have expected him to play some classical guitar, he was really more inspired by Rush, the Beatles, and Neil Young. So he was off to the races. He preferred figuring it out for himself with the neighborhood kids as opposed to taking lessons. So he did take lessons and they were fairly short-lived. Always encouraging his love of music, Virginia even encouraged him when he switched to drums and played in two punk bands starting when he was 15 years old.
Cool.
These bands were called Mission Impossible and Dane Bramage.
Clever.
Virginia chaperoned him at his gigs because many of them were you know, like no alcohol, and they were young, so you probably had to have a parent be there. So she really encouraged him and she went along, and maybe punk music wasn't her favorite, but she saw the value in it regardless.
Yeah. She's not a regular mom. She's a cool mom.
She's a cool mom. And she would prove to be even cooler because soon Dave quit school and joined a band called Scream.
Wow. Yeah.
So even though Virginia was a teacher herself, she encouraged Dave to take this opportunity. He didn't thrive in a standard classroom setting. So instead of learning in the classroom, she knew he'd be learning by traveling the world. She also valued that kind of education. She says, touring the United States and Europe provided the opportunity for an education that going to another American history class or doing another math assignment couldn't compare to. I thought it was a great idea. I was sorry I couldn't go along.
Aww. That is so cool, though. And that's something most parents don't really consider. It's like, figure out what your child is good at, what they're not good at, where they excel, and guide them toward that, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think he seemed like the kind of kid who got A's and F's. He yeah. loved what he loved, and he did well in what he loved, and he just left what he didn't like.
Mm-hmm. And it's cool to hear a teacher, not just a parent, but a teacher saying, you know, not everyone needs to be the best at math, you know?
She said it's like the school system and how it's built that lets the children down and not the other way around.
Yeah.
We can't discuss Dave and Virginia Grohl's musical journey and band evolutions without talking about Nirvana. Virginia has a chapter of her book dedicated to the band, and she begins it by telling the reader that she has a box of memories saved from the time Dave played with Nirvana. Dave's band Scream had taken him to Seattle, Washington. They completed a successful tour of Europe, limped across the United States, as she puts it, and then disbanded. Once that happened, Dave auditioned for Nirvana in Aberdeen, Washington. They were on their fifth drummer. He got the gig, of course. Dave moved in with Kurt Cobain and learned the music of this new band, Nirvana.
I'm all excited.
Virginia says that many parents had told her that she was crazy to have let Dave go, that he was too young. It doesn't sound like she regrets it, though. 6 months after joining Nirvana, the band signed with a major label and recorded Nevermind. They replaced Michael Jackson as number one on the Billboard 200, and a few months later, they were recognized everywhere they went. She says, enter the press. TV, newspapers, magazines, all of them, all of the time, everywhere.
Yeah.
She also says, 3 short dramatic years, that was all. In the end, 1 gunshot. Searing pain, irreversible loss. The music stopped. Left in this wake of misery were Kurt's mother, wife, daughter, and 2 bandmates, all bereft but still hounded by the ever-hungry press who hoped to record their anguish. Most of them were rendered speechless by the power of that loss.
Ugh.
And so this brings us to our first rock mom, besides Virginia, Wendy Cobain O'Connor.
I'm already like, yeah, you can pick some good ones.
Virginia and Wendy met in New York in 1992. This was Nirvana's weekend at MTV and Saturday Night Live. Virginia thought that Wendy didn't look that much older than the boys in the band. If you've seen pictures of her, she's got like long blonde hair, bangs, super cute, really beautiful. The two had an instant connection. They both bragged in a very, you know, loving way about their sons, Wendy telling her that Kurt had been writing as long as she could remember, on walls, in notebooks, on his shoes. I quote, she said that she and Kurt had always been close, even though family circumstances often separated them. Kurt had wanted his mother there the night of Saturday Night Live, and when he was looking up the stage, appearing lost, Wendy told Virginia that he was looking for her because he always looked for her. She says it made him feel safe because he was always scared.
Oh, Kurt.
Do you know what situation she's talking about that separated them?
Yes. His parents got divorced when he was really young, and that definitely affected him. And I think both of the parents ended up in other relationships, and he had a sister. And I think it wasn't like either parent really made an effort to make him part of the family that the new family they kind of created, or he felt like he was an outsider. So it affected his family dynamics because he felt lonely, I think, and unwanted when the split happened.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
She didn't go into detail, but I was like, I think I know someone who might know.
Yes.
Wendy was the first rock mom that Virginia had ever met. They kept in touch over the years, although it has been painful. Wendy would send notes, photos of Frances, her granddaughter, and they saw each other at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame reunion in 2014. She had worked on a film project that would tell Kurt's story, thinking that it would be a therapeutic experience and process. However, the documentary devastated her since she was portrayed as an uncaring and distant mother.
Yeah.
She couldn't handle any more pain, and she's almost never given any interviews.
Yeah.
So for the book, they decided not to do a typical interview, but rather recalled memories of Kurt and his sweet and shy nature. Two of Virginia's favorite memories of Kurt are of him outside with Dave and some friends in the sunshine, and he's laughing. That's when Virginia snapped a photo of him. Mm. She includes this like a really nice photo of Kurt smiling, like laughing.
Yeah.
Another was at the Reading Festival in England when Kurt said to the audience, "Guess what? Today is Dave's mom's birthday. Let's sing to her." And then he pulled her on stage and the fans sang happy birthday. Of Wendy, Virginia says, "Wendy wants to hold on to moments like that. Sunshine, smiles, and celebrations have been rare commodities in her life. As her friend, I hope that someday she will get her share."
Aw. Aw, Wendy. Yeah. And it's unfortunate because in that situation too, Kurt never got to live into his adult life where that kind of family healing probably would have been natural in conversations that maybe, you know, he was too young or too vulnerable at the time to have. You would have had that maybe further down the line, but sadly they don't. But at least she has the good memories still.
Exactly. Okay.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Now it's time to move on to another rock mom. Let's go to Verna Griffin, mother of Andre Young, better known as Dr. Dre.
Oh.
For more information on Verna, in her own words, you can read Long Road Out of Compton, her autobiography that was published in 2008.
Oh, interesting. I'm going to write that down and maybe we'll check that out sometime. Mm-hmm.
Verna was born in Long Beach, California in 1949 to a single mother. Verna's grandparents were sharecroppers in Texas. She's proud of her enterprising grandparents. Virginia writes, looking back, she, as in Verna, sees the lessons they left for their family as they translated their lives, limited by long-held practices of segregation, into a kind of prosperity not often achieved by those in their situation. They defied expectations by taking ownership of a sugar mill, becoming completely self-sufficient on their own piece of land. Hmm. So just giving a little bit of history into Dr. Dre's great-grandparents.
Yeah, cool.
Growing up, Verna loved to sing. Like Virginia, she also formed an all-girls singing group, and they called themselves the Four Aces.
I love these women. Of course, their kids ended up in music.
Oh, yeah. Not just in music, but like some of the most successful artists of our time.
Makes sense.
Yeah. She loved singing at neighborhood parties, and she actually met a boy in a singing group of his own, and Verna fell in love. Verna also became pregnant at the age of 15.
Wow.
So they married, and she became the mother of Andre Ramel Young, Dr. Dre.
My goodness.
As a baby, he needed music around him at all times. Apparently, he hated the quiet. So Verna played all kinds of music, and during the year of his birth, that was the year of the Four Tops, the Temptations, Marvin Gaye, the Supremes. So he was surrounded by the best of the best.
Yeah.
She built quite the record collection, and in later years would encourage Dre to DJ when friends came over.
Cool.
Like you choose the music. Going back, while Verna cradled her four-month-old baby in Compton, around her was a war zone ablaze with the Watts riots of 1965. Almost every major city experienced race riots that year. Virginia writes, it also led to the emergence of new voices in an expanded political and music scene. The Black Power movement, the Black Panther Party, and other forces raised issues that had fueled the riots as our country struggled to come to terms with disparities in housing, employment, basic rights, and opportunity. This was Dre's birthright, which he would translate to the underlying themes of his lyrics years later when he became a part of NWA.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Dre would go from the arms of his frightened teen mother to eventually becoming one of Forbes' lists of world's most powerful people and a billionaire. June 19th would be celebrated as Dr. Dre Day in Compton, California.
Wow.
And we're going to go back again a little bit to talk about the woman who made him into that man. Verna became a single mother when she divorced Dre's father, which... you get married at 15, 16 years old. It's bound to happen. And so while she worked to take care of him, Dre was looked after by his grandparents. Now, it's important to note that another very special person in his life would become very influential. And that was his grandmother, who began teaching him and reading poetry to him at the age of 3.
I love all these women just taking charge and building them up and... so cool.
Verna encouraged him to follow his interest in DJing after he had seen a DJ scratch a Grandmaster Flash record. In 1984, Verna bought Dre the ultimate Christmas gift, a mixer that would combine recorded and live sounds to create new music. He formed a group called Freak Patrol and worked in a nightclub DJing weekends. Verna drove him and his friends to the club for 9 o'clock every Saturday night and returned to pick them all up at 1 a.m.
Oh, Verna's such an amazing woman. Love it.
Dr. Dre, the master of mixology, was born in large part because of his mother, Verna.
Yeah.
Verna has faced hardships, losing one of her sons, Tyree, to gang violence. Verna is an incredible woman, And while Dr. Dre has been financially generous with her, Verna has always wanted to maintain her independence and had enrolled in the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising to study textiles and pattern making to pursue her own dreams.
That's so cool. And it's important to remember too, like when Dre was in his early 20s, she's just in her mid 30s. She's mm-hmm. like our age, which is crazy. And of course, like you'd want to grow and live your own life too.
I think she actually became a grandmother by like 31 or 33 years old.
Oh, it's wild. Once her kids are grown, she's still a young woman. And I'm mm-hmm. so happy she found a passion in fashion.
Yes. And with that passion, some of the things that she created were authentic African traditions, and she would also hold exhibits to showcase them.
Cool.
Virginia, upon visiting Verna, says that she's happy and secure in her beautiful LA home. And at the time the book was written, Verna was caring for her 85-year-old mother, working on her new fashion line, staying involved with school activities for her 15 grandchildren and 9 great-grandchildren.
My goodness, that is a big family.
In 2016, Verna's fashion line was up and running as an online boutique. She doesn't mention on the site that she's the mother of Dr. Dre. She says, "I want my fashion to sell my name, not my name to sell my fashion." And being the mother of Dre, she says, "I feel like I too have accomplished something. That's what I wanted, for my children to grow up and make something of themselves, to do better than me. That makes me very proud."
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of parental support that we all need and should get. So good for her.
Yeah.
What a badass.
Yep. All right. So moving on to the last mother that I'm going to showcase in this episode, but there are so many great ones in the book, and I'm sure the documentary is fantastic as well. We're going to talk about somebody who seems to be kind of a friend of Virginia. They actually live pretty close to one another, just a mile apart. And so they got together at Virginia's house over lunch to discuss the daughters, Esty, Danielle, and Alana Haim.
Oh, so I like that you picked like different genres, different generations. This is cool.
There are so many different genres and generations that she covers in the book too. Like she talks to Geddy Lee, Rush's mom. She talks to one of the Beastie Boys' moms. She talks to Amy Winehouse's mom.
Oh, I'm going to have to read this.
She talks to, what's the guy from REM?
Michael Stipe?
Yeah, talks to his mom. So there's so many great ones.
Cool.
And I really encourage everybody to.
I hope they make like a second book, or I guess continue it with the series.
Yeah, there's like other ones that I was like not super interested in, but I still read because they're great, and she does a great job, like Miranda Lambert, Kelly Clarkson, Josh Groban.
Gotcha.
All right, so let's talk about Donna Haim. Donna grew up in Philadelphia in a musical household herself. Donna's mother had a beautiful voice, so that's the Haim sisters' grandmother, mm-hmm. and they'd sing and dance around the living room together. Donna's mother bought her first guitar, and Donna picked up the instrument naturally. So she too was a musician.
Of course.
She loved taking lessons, figuring out chords, and found her voice. In high school, she was part of Philadelphia's music scene. When she was 15, Donna was invited to visit her aunt in Los Angeles, and it changed her life. Donna's family ended up moving to LA, and eventually she would attend UCLA for art education. Hmm. Fun little fact, once she became a teacher, she would become a teacher to Paul Thomas Anderson.
Oh, no way.
Yes, who recently has directed like 6 of Haim's
That's right.
Videos.
That's right. I always wondered how they got together. That makes sense now.
Yeah. But before that, she played in bands with her friends. And then she met Mordecai Moti Haim through mutual friends. He was preparing to return back to Israel when they met, but you know what young love can do to a man. He was a drummer, and they shared their passion for music and travel. And Donna would eventually love visiting his family in Israel before they settled in LA, got married, and had their daughters.
Cool.
So no surprise that the girls grew up with all kinds of music in their household. They listened to Donna's favorites, pop and folk, and Moti's favorite, Latin percussive sounds.
Nice.
And of course, the radio at the time. Each girl started piano lessons at age 4, and they were always singing and harmonizing from a young age. Like, they were just born to be rock stars.
Yeah.
They even played as a family band, like mom and dad included, called Rockenheim.
Cute.
The sisters were in choir, in performances, and always went to schools that highlighted the arts and music. Esty loved being in plays, and the girls all auditioned and got into performing arts high school. So that there was one in LA, and apparently it was so competitive it was nicknamed Fame High.
Gotcha.
The sisters also worked part-time jobs because Donna wanted to instill work ethic in them. Apparently, Esty heard that waitresses with Southern accents make more money, and since she was so good at theater, she'd put on a Southern drawl and make huge tips.
Have to use that sometime.
Esty graduated from UCLA in 2 years with an ethnomusicology degree.
Nice.
Danielle enrolled at UCLA, but quit to go on tour with Jenny Lewis's band at the age of 19.
Oh, I did not know that she toured with Jenny. I love Jenny Lewis.
Yeah. I think Donna was a little bit more hesitant to let her go, but I think it was Danielle's father that said, you know, we can trust her. I think she's going to be okay. I think we should let her pursue this path. So kind of like Virginia and Dave, like, yeah, let her drop out of school and tour with Jenny Lewis. Yeah. Yeah, let him drop out of school and tour with Scream. Danielle went on to play shows with Julian Casablancas and CeeLo Green after that.
Oh, cool.
And everything turned out fine.
It certainly did.
When the sisters played together as a band, Donna and started performing together, Donna and Moti became their road crew, attending all gigs, being both manager, driver, and roadie, and they loved it. Of course, we know the Heim sisters would become huge, and the parents had to take a step back. Donna and Moti have a real estate business and travel with their daughters as they tour the world and have even reunited Rockenheim for a few charity gigs.
Oh, that's so cool.
Heim and Foo Fighters have played together on the same stage with Stevie Nicks to perform Stop Dragging My Heart Around. Backstage, Virginia and Donna couldn't have been prouder, feeling like a real rock and roll family. Virginia writes, Heim will be making music together for a very long time, in perfect three-part harmony, assuring the legacy of this extraordinary musical family.
Yeah. It's interesting also how they all stem from not just musical families, but seemingly tight-knit families, and with families that know how important it is to have that connection, you know? And support each other.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. On being a rock mom, Virginia writes, as mothers, we often felt alone. We didn't know what to do, and we flew solo most of the time without flight manuals or guidebooks. Many of us struggled through these challenges pre-internet. Quite a few of us were single parents. Many had little or no money. It sounds like she wouldn't change a thing, though.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia loves traveling with Dave, the band, and their families. She always loves hearing the line, My Sweet Virginia, in the song Arlandria, which is about her. And of course, through her son, she was able to meet her idols, like Paul McCartney, Brian May, and Prince Harry.
Oh, that's so cool. I love that she's a fangirl as well.
Yeah, there's this really cute picture of her in the book, just kind of like hands clasped together looking up at Prince Harry giggling, and he's saying something and Dave's laughing, and she's like, that moment is completely blank for me, but judging by the picture it looks like we're having a good time.
That's so funny.
And then of having dinner with Paul McCartney, she said that she pretty much would kind of work it into conversation, oh, the time I had dinner with Paul, until her friends were like, please stop.
If I had dinner with Paul McCartney, that is my opening line for every sentence for the rest of my life.
I know. Of his mother, Dave says, but beyond any biological information, there is love, something that defies all science and reason. And that I am most fortunate to have been given. It's maybe the most defining factor in anyone's life, surely an artist's greatest muse. And there is no love like a mother's love. It is life's greatest song. We are indebted to the women who have given us life, for without them, there would be no music.
Ah, what a great line.
And that's it. Short and sweet. A couple of rock moms. This one's for the moms.
Yeah, that was great. I'm curious if there's any moms listening who have kids who love music, because I'm sure if you're listening to us, like you love music, right?
And yeah, we've definitely met a lot of dolls through our workshop. And we know like Patty Johnson has gone to shows with her daughter. And we know a couple. Yeah, I definitely know some mothers that have followed, or some daughters that have followed in their mother's footsteps of being lovers of musicians and fans and everything. And
Yeah, that was great.
I did a Rock Daughter not too long ago, and then I was like, oh, let's do some mothers again. So
yeah, I'm glad you thought of it, because this is what we want to do here. We want to not just support, but give a voice to and teach everyone about all these incredible women that you don't know about. And yeah, I had no idea about all of them. So thank you.
I really want to look for Verna's book, Long Road Out of Compton.
Yeah,
just to hear that story in more detail. Like that was just a brief overview, but it would be wonderful to hear that story in detail.
Yeah, she certainly sounds like she's had a fascinating life, and I'm so glad everything's worked out for all of them and that they get to participate and enjoy their children's success as well.
Most of them. Aside from Wendy, whose story is so tragic. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
I like the way Virginia talked about it, and she seemed just very respectful of, you know, Wendy's privacy, and just recalled memories that they had together and included a really sweet photo of the two of them. And
yeah, it is interesting because, of course, again, with Kurt passing so early, and in his songs, he does kind of cover the feelings that he had as a child of being unwanted and things like that. Like Something in the Way, for instance, that song is about feeling that way. And I'm sure, of course, once Frances Bean came along, I think she lived with his parents for a while, like Wendy maybe. So at least she has that family support through them as well.
And did you see the documentary that I was referring to? She didn't name the documentary in the book.
I've seen a couple. I'm guessing maybe Montage of Heck. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say
the
again.
The book was written in 2017, and it sounds like it was
pretty recent.
Maybe around that time.
Yeah, that's the last one. I have that on my wall over here.
Yeah. So you liked it. You have the poster.
Yeah. Yes, I liked it. And again, I don't think it's necessarily that she looks bad. We always have to remember too, like feelings are strong. So even though I'm sure she was there and, you know, probably wanted to be there more than she was, for a child feeling it, like you're feeling it so extremely, right? Mm-hmm. So I think for people just to immediately write off like neglectful parent, because we know that Kurt felt neglected, doesn't necessarily mean like terrible parent. It just means, like I said, they got divorced, they built other families, and you're trying to find your place in that too, right? So it's always an interesting, families are interesting. That's, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Who's who's other, like, who else would you be interested in hearing about? The Amy Winehouse's mom, I'm trying to remember, Janice. That was a really interesting story.
Eddie Vedder, he's also talked about his parental issues in music, and that would probably be a really interesting one too. And to know, you know, where his mother's at now and all of that. I would love to hear that. So many, actually.
Yeah.
And I know Courtney Love's dad did like a terrible documentary on her. I think he made it like she killed Kurt. Mm-hmm. So some of us get lucky with very supportive parents who are like truly there for you, and then not others, not so much. But
yeah,
I'm glad to hear some happy mother stories, because yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for today. If you want more Muses, head over to TikTok at Muses Pod, Instagram,
Patreon. We're everywhere.
Yeah. Send us an email, musespod@gmail.com. Always happy to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for supporting us. Yes. We'll see you back here next week.
Yes. Or you can find us on the Stereo app on Tuesdays as well. So check that out. We usually will make a post about it on our socials before to tell you guys what we're talking about this week. So keep a lookout and join us sometime.
All right. We'll see you there.
See ya.
Bye. Muses is researched, edited, and produced by us, Chantelle Lemieux and Lynx O'Leary.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.